Welcome to a new episode of The Brand Called You. We have brought to you some really iconic individuals, and today I have a good friend, a member of the YPO, and someone who has done some amazing things. Naveen Munjal, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh.
Naveen is an MBA from Huron University, London. He worked in various sectors like auto, bicycles, BPO, electric vehicles, all of the Hero Group. He's the MD of Hero Eco Group and Hero Electric Vehicles. Naveen, you know, you entered the automotive industry at a very young age. And then you went to do your MBA and then came back into the family business. What was it like for a young individual to come back in the middle of such iconic names of the Munjal family?
Okay, so when I... Thank you, Ashutosh, for having me here. It's indeed a pleasure to be here with you. Okay, so going back, when I joined the business, it wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, so in a way, if you look at it, it was very easy. In a way, if you look at it, it wasn't easy. Because when you came back and you've got three generations working in a company, which is extremely well-oiled machinery, and working on a day-to-day basis, progressing on a day-to-day basis and doing extremely well, there's little that a new guy who comes in can add value to it. And that is where the struggles lie. So I was never interested in just sitting back and letting, you know, things happen and having an office to myself and things. So I was always looking at how do I really expand? What is it that I can really do? So when I came back after doing my MBA, I was all about 22 years old. And I had already worked in Land Rover in the UK. Okay. And I did my internship there for a while. And I was thoroughly enjoying that. I was enjoying the experience of starting off from a trainee going up to an executive level and rising up from there. Yeah. But then the family said, you know, enough is enough. You've been out for too long. Mm-hmm. So come back. We need you here. Come back to the family business. And emotions play up, you know that. So I came back and I realized very soon that there's little value that I can add in an existing ongoing business. The only thing I could do is, you know, bring new ideas and new. And I've always been, even though I did MBA, I've always been in business. But I've always been technically aligned, mm-hmm. so I understood technology right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And maybe at some point of time, I should have actually done engineering rather than business all through. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, in my mind, I think technology constantly. Mm-hmm. And so when I came back, I tried to innovate in a lot of ways in the bicycle sector. I mean, as early as 2000, I launched electric bicycles in India because I saw, you know, that there is a scope for, there's a room for people to move from a bicycle to electric and then graduate up to a motorcycle and cars. That was way ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. Even when I was back in the cycle sector, I was always looking at new opportunities. And that's where recently Barrett in 98, we were looking at diversification within the group. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at various new ideas.
Yeah.
And so we went off to the US. Mm-hmm. And what was supposed to be a four-day trip to figure out what the strategy for the group is going to be, it turned out to be 4.5 months. Mm-hmm. And that's the time, pre-2000, when the market was so hot in the Silicon Valley, that you actually had signboards saying that if you've got an idea, we've got the money.
Wow.
And so we would go to some of these guys and we would say, okay, listen, how do we do this? Okay, your idea is not big enough. You need to increase the scale. So it was an absolute crazy time at that point of time. I remember a friend who said, you know, I had this idea and I went to some VCs and I said, I'm looking to raise $100,000. They said, no, that's not enough. So you come back to us with a couple of million dollar plan. So he came back with $1 million plan on the same business plan and he raised the money for it.
Yes.
And so, you know, a lot of it didn't make sense, but we eventually got into the BPO sector, the call centers. I set up the BPO here. But that's where we saw that India has a value to add.
Yeah.
In terms of manpower, in terms of technology. So there's a play of technology and manpower.
Yeah.
What I realized at that point is we were too soon in the day to have only a technology play. There was no advantage that India offered. And India's advantage was actually the people, the young population that we had. So I've had a very interesting journey so far. Starting off, first I was working within the family businesses. And then I went off into Land Rover and then Hero Cycles and then the BPO and then back into exports and then into where I'm
Hero
right
Eco.
Now, automotive, yeah.
So, Hero Cycles is where the whole group started from, isn't it?
Correct.
And you seem to have come a full circle when you started electric cycles and electric vehicles and two-wheelers.
Yeah.
But talk to us about Hero Eco Group, which is the one that you have.
So Hero Eco, basically, we had a family separation. We had a family restructuring in 2010. And I had already been working since actually 2001 on this whole electric vehicle space or environmental friendly vehicles, so to speak. I was very clear, I mean, all these last 20 years, almost 20 years, that the world needs to move away from the oil-based economy.
Correct.
We have to move away from polluting vehicles. We have to move away. And there's got to be something out there which makes it happen. Technology is advancing. And if it's happening in other sectors, then why not automotive? So I initially launched electric bicycles here. And that didn't really work. Then again, I toyed with that whole idea and launched it in 2004. And didn't work again. And then in 2007, I launched electric scooters, which is like the bigger scooters. And that's when it began to take off.
Okay.
I also realized the mistakes that we had made along the way. So one of the bigger mistakes was that, you know, people, when they're on a bicycle or when they're on any form of transport, they're aspirational. So if they want to graduate up.
Correct.
So moving from a cycle to an electric cycle is not really an aspirational product. So those are some of the initial mistakes that I made.
Yeah.
Then in 2010, when we had a family restructuring, within my family, and I was lucky that my family agreed, my father and my brother, they agreed to the strategy that I was working on, which is we have to be in environmental friendly products. We have to cater to that segment. So we eventually went off into bicycles, which is my brother looks after.
Yeah.
And then I was already doing electric, so that was another space which I said we have to do it on a global scale. We can't just do it on a national scale because the market globally is in infancy at this point of time. And it is going to grow. So there is no large brand which is there across the globe at this point in that space, in the two-wheeler segment, mainly. And so there is room for us to build that up. And the third space that we worked on, which I started working on, was the medical products, which are more the rehab products, wheelchairs, walkers, etc. Because what I saw was there was a huge gap in the market. It was a very unorganized and a very fragmented market. So there was room for an organized player to come in with a branded product, with a good make in India, made in India product, with a robust product.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been doing for the past.
That's true. There is no wheelchair which is motorized.
Yeah.
Nothing absolutely available.
So we've got those in the last couple of years.
Phenomenal.
And so I've been continuing to push this. And it's only now, after so many years of struggle, when suddenly the world is saying that, you know, electric is the future, etc. But it's been an interesting journey.
Interesting journey. So let's talk about electric vehicles. The whole world talks Tesla.
Yeah.
Everyone, you know, it's like in the old days, if you wanted a photocopier, you said Xerox, right? Here, if you say electric vehicle, the first name that comes is Tesla. And yet, a lot of companies are coming with four-wheelers, and you said the two-wheelers, there aren't too many. What is the potential in our country for two-wheelers? Because this is a country which has a very large two-wheeler population.
And so two-wheeler is the low-hanging fruit in India. And this is not just my statement. I mean, there are numerous reports which numerous consultants who've been hired by government in the past and who said the same thing, that two-wheelers is your low-hanging fruit. There are numerous reasons for it. Now, in a two-wheeler, your range that you require, see, India is a very different market when you look at it versus any other part of the world. Now, let me just step back a little bit and just give you this thing. So there are electric mobility happens for various reasons.
Sorry.
In some countries, it happens because the government dictates says that because of various reasons. Again, could be oil dependency or it could be pollution. If you look at China, for that matter, it was pollution, oil dependency, both. And the government said, we have to move in that direction. And now it's very difficult for you to actually buy an IC engine vehicle in that market in the last. So that's the transition which has happened in the last 10 years. You go westwards, you look at Europe and you look at the US, etc. There the transition's happening to electric because of various other reasons. Health. In fact, there are some reports which say that, you know, electric bicycles are replacing cars.
Yeah.
So you had a second small car which you were using to go to your neighborhood shops, which you're no longer doing. In some of these markets, electric cycles are selling more than the conventional bicycles because aging population. They want the exercise, but yet they don't want the strain on the knees. And in some cases, it's also hilly and gives them range and mobility. Now, in most of these cases, your electric is more expensive than your IC.
Correct.
Than a conventional vehicles. You look at a Tesla. I mean, your comparable IC engine vehicle would be multiple times less than
correct.
Tesla.
Correct.
But India is a unique place where people want the electric to be either the same price as a IC or lower.
Okay.
Because it's a new technology, they don't want to take that risk, and there is a certain sacrifice they're making. Mm. So when you look at a two-wheeler, for example, it obviously, it of course, eases your a lot of pains going to a petrol station to fill up on fuel, going to a service center to actually service your vehicle, because here now your vehicle can actually be serviced at home.
Yeah.
You can plug it into your home wall outlet or take the battery up to your apartment. I mean, you're on the 16th floor. Mm. So if you had an electric vehicle, electric two-wheeler, you could actually get the battery up here, charge it here, go up down, plug it, and it's only 7 kilos.
Correct.
And run with it for about 60 to 70 kilometers or even more, depending on what configuration you've chosen. So it's a very easy product to run. The only issue is that your battery prices are still high.
Mm-hmm.
So as your battery prices come down, there are some estimates that 2025 or 2023, the parity between performance and price with IC is going to be at par, in which case then this food market would have exploded by then. So India, two-wheelers, it's a 22 million two-wheeler market.
Yeah.
That market can easily convert into electric. Of course, you have to create the whole infrastructure around it and the ecosystem has to come in. But if you look at what's happened in the e-rig space in the last 5 or 6 years since they came in, let's not talk about the quality because a lot of that quality is actually not very good quality. But nevertheless, that whole ecosystem got created. No matter what part of the country you go in, you see these e-rickshaws being used all over the place.
Yeah.
And that's because, one, it's much easier for a guy to use an e-rickshaw than to use a normal conventional rickshaw. Second, it's a commercial product for him. So he's making more money on a day-to-day basis.
Mm.
So that whole ecosystem, even though a lot of these were unregulated and not really legal on the streets, but that ecosystem got created.
Correct.
So when people begin to see the benefit of two-wheelers, which we've got about 45% of our buyers are actually repeat customers, and we are now expanding a growth rate of anything from 50 to 80% every year, year on year.
Wow.
So we are seeing that growth. And like I said, you know, two-wheelers is the easy because you require minimal charging infrastructure. There are multiple methods by which two-wheelers can take off. You need a basic charging infrastructure.
Yeah.
To help people get over the range anxiety issue.
Yeah.
Or in some cases, in the commercial cases where you're using vehicles for deliveries, etc., even a battery swapping infrastructure for them could work.
Correct.
Because the guy is going from one place and he's coming back to the home location.
Correct.
And you can't have the vehicles off-road for too long.
Correct.
So both options we offer to our customers.
Correct.
So it's begun to happen.
Mm.
The issues that exist are more to do with, you know, policy or long-term regulation or policy and which direction we are headed in. So there are there's some confusion on that. But nevertheless, we are pushing, and I'm totally
Today's millennial is much more conscious about environment, about pollution, about, you know, how to be much more effective. And for, you know, the millennial today.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Ashu. I mean, if you look at an example, you know, at our time, Diwali was a big...
Your time and my time are different.
Slightly different, but nevertheless, okay? So, yes. When we look at, you know, Diwali, even if you go back 20 years or 15 years back, Diwali was a big event. We used to go out, get all these firecrackers and everything. Now, I'm not allowed to get firecrackers, right? When children have completely banned firecrackers from home. So, that is the new millennials. That's what they're learning in school, you know, the kind of pollution that exists out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I was shocked that last year, my children's schools had to be shut down because of pollution in the air. And the fire alarms were going off just because of the smoke in the air. So we are where we live.
When everyone recognizes, you know, there are many reasons for pollution, but when everyone recognizes the positives of electric vehicles, what is stopping us in terms of policy?
Okay, so let's put policy on the side for a second. Now, if you look at any new technology that comes in, and that's disruptive technology, there is obviously resistance from the conventional companies which exist, which have been doing extremely well for the past so many decades and who are there. So obviously there is resistance from that. Infrastructure is there, the ecosystem is there. Now, how do you disrupt that ecosystem or how does that change? So any new product coming in will take longer. Also, it's a chicken and egg situation. New technologies will be more expensive to start with because the adoption's not been there yet.
Yeah.
And adoption will not happen if they are more expensive.
Yeah.
So what happens first? You drop the prices, get it down to a level which is more acceptable to a consumer, and then it'll expand, and then the prices will come down for you, and that's the hope that you live in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what we've been doing as well. So we've been working at price levels which are acceptable to a consumer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now what happens is, coming back to policy, what you need is actually a very clear-cut policy to say that this is the direction that we want to move in. Now there could be various paths to move there. I'm going to be putting restrictions on certain areas, or I'm going to put restrictions on certain vehicles, or I'm going to, as the government has done, to say that, you know, we have to move to Bharat 6 norms from April of next year, mm-hmm. of 2020. Like that, they have to set regulations and they have to set goals. And that is the target that I want to achieve by so-and-so date. And then you work backwards from it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that we've been having is that sometimes they say that, and then again, there's flip-flopping, and they go back to saying that, you know, okay, there is no policy or there is no regulation. And then they flip-flop back. Now, what that does is, companies like us will still continue to work because we believe that this is what the future is and this is where we're headed.
Mm.
But a lot of other companies, it's fed-sitting that happens. So when I speak at various conferences, you know, when I talk to somebody that, you know, unless the policy is there, we cannot come in. I say, look, policy coming or not is a different story. You can keep on fence-sitting, just keep on talking about it.
Mm.
Because your talking about it is just creating that whole PR exercise. People are getting more aware. Now, with that awareness, our sales are going up.
Mm.
And by the time you decide to jump in, it may be too late for you, or it may be too expensive for you. You can still come in, but there'll be a cost to it.
That's true. So I was speaking to somebody, you know, in the traditional auto space, not on a podcast, but who's a friend. And I was asking them, you know, why are you holding back? And they said, look at the amount of investments we have made. I said, but that doesn't mean that you're going to stop the introduction of new technology. But you're absolutely right. There's a pushback that's happening from the traditional business.
And this is at a global level, you know. Yeah. So their investments, it's a well-oiled machinery. Yeah. Now to change that whole thing to something else is a huge disruption for them.
I know. So one other aspect that is talked about from electric vehicles is, you spoke about the battery. But I was also reading somewhere that disposal of batteries is a serious challenge. And we haven't been able to come up with norms which apparently the government wants.
See, disposal is not such a big issue right now for lithium-ion batteries. It is a big issue for lead-acid batteries.
I see.
Now, electric doesn't even contribute 0.1% in India in the lead-acid battery space. I've faced this numerous times, even with government officials saying that, you know, okay, these batteries, what you guys, electric guys are doing, this thing. I said, look, what about all the scooters, motorcycles, cars, trucks, buses, everything that's coming back with a flooded battery? Do you know where that battery is going? I said, we have a complete record of 100% of every battery that we've sold and every battery that's come back in for replacement or recycling back to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to a recycler, official recycler, who then recycles the batteries, they extract the material out of it, and those batteries get used. Now, we've moved to lithium-ion batteries in the last few years. Now, lithium-ion batteries, one, will last you a lot longer. So, and then once they have finished their end of life cycle with you, with the automotive, they go into stationary applications.
Mm-hmm.
So your UPSs, for example, which right now run on lead-acid batteries, mm-hmm. will switch to lithium. And they've already begun to switch to lithium. And majority of those are recycled batteries.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I spend so much in getting a completely new lithium-ion battery?
Correct.
Where it's already seldomly used.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now power is not such a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So these go into stationary applications for the next few years. Even after that, all those materials, the nickel, metal, the cobalt and the magnesium, etc., they get extracted from there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that a battery, it's not that bad as it's made to sound. In India, recyclers already coming in. Lithium ion is still new in India.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at around the world, whether you look at, you know, the West or you look at the East, there are numerous recycling plants which are already there, which extract everything from the battery.
Mm-hmm.
And then the water materials that are left are disposed of in an eco-friendly manner.
Okay.
So it's a bigger problem with the flooded older batteries
mm-hmm.
than it is with the newer technologies.
Okay. And one last question on the electric vehicles before we move to the next segment. There's a big requirement of infrastructure to be created for charging. Do you think that's happening in India?
Not so much.
Not so much.
So what's happening is that what you require, okay, let me give you an example. When people look at electric vehicles, they look at the whole industry as a whole.
Yeah.
But it's not actually, you cannot look at it as a whole because you've got different segments. So you've got your public charge, public vehicles, which are all your buses and everything, which do a certain route that they do. Then you've got your cars. Now cars require, again, a different level of charging infrastructure. Now two-wheelers, the vehicles that we have, they require a very different level of charging infrastructure. So generally our vehicles will give you a range of anything from 70, 60 to 80 or 100 kilometers, depending on what configuration you've chosen. You are charging the vehicle at home. All you need is topping up should you go a longer distance with that, which is not generally the case. Even in metros, the average usage is sub 13 kilometers a day for a two-wheeler, generally. Our speeds are extremely low now. They've come down drastically. They're sub 25 kilometers an hour across most of the metros. So charging infrastructure is more of an anxiety issue. I'll tell you what some of our dealers did. So we did an experiment in East India where the dealer, he told the people that, you know, you have anxiety issues with charging infrastructure. This is my charging infrastructure in the city. So I've got 300 charging points. Now these charging points were nothing but panwalas, kiryana stores, small outlets, where he tied up with them that, you know, just put this Hero Electric charging board there and you can charge them 5, 10 rupees and they'll also buy something from you when they come there. You know, so they're not just going to come and charge. They'll have a tea from you or they'll get a pan or they'll get something. And he told the customers that this is my charging infrastructure. If you're stranded anywhere, you can just go plug in, charge there for the next half an hour, 1 hour that you're there, and then he'll give you enough range to go back home. His sales went up 3x in the next few months.
Wow.
But guess how many people actually use that infrastructure? Nil. Nobody needed it because the range was 70, 80 kilometers. So it just gave them an assurance. So that's what they need, comfort, peace of mind. Like if you have a car, you know, if you go, you're driving around, you know that there's a petrol pump. Should I run out of a charge somewhere?
Correct.
But it's just.
But you know, again, I don't have any knowledge of battery technology, but I've often wondered, you know, so many charging capabilities are being developed. Even if I'm wearing a watch, is there nowhere to charge your battery from the motion of the vehicle, which then gives you perpetual charge?
There are technologies being talked about.
Okay.
But what happens is, to create that energy, kinetic energy, you have to create friction.
I see.
So if you're moving and you're creating friction, it's a counter effective to the movement of the vehicle itself. Because you're actually putting a development on the vehicle movement itself.
Okay.
But what happens is there is regen that happens with the minute every time you brake and you're going downhill. Because then you've lifted your foot off the accelerator, and when you're going downhill, there can be friction created on the wheels, which have to, in any case, slow you down.
Yeah.
So there is regen which happens, and that regen, depending on what technology you're using, is anything from 4 to 10% or so of the energy that goes back. But 100% perpetual motion, there's no such technology out there. I hope there will be something in the future, but nothing right now.
Okay. So one more question. You know, you are developing a business of e-bike rentals. And yet one sees all over the world, the bike rental business seems to have been a challenge.
See, what happened in the bicycle business, and that actually started in Asia, was there was no real business model around it. I saw some of these vehicles being dumped into cities without any business model. I met with some of these companies in the last few years. And I said, okay, so what is your business model? How is it going to work? And where are your economics? Mm-hmm. And they had no economics. Mm-hmm. All that was there was that we've got raised this money and we're dumping these vehicles into a city where you use them and you... Ease of use, certainly. Yeah. But the amount of theft that was happening and the amount of damage that was happening was immense.
Yeah.
In fact, there is, in China, there's a cycle graveyard which is there, where there are millions and millions of these cycles which have been now dumped. Mm-hmm. So there has to be an economic... There has to be a business sense around what you're doing.
Correct.
Now, even when we are doing or when we are supporting the rental business, there has to be, you have to take into account that initially there will be damage that is done by people. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they will come around to it. Mm-hmm. So you have to figure out a way of minimizing that damage or the loss that happens there. Mm-hmm. Theft, etc., won't really happen because the vehicles are all GPS controlled.
Yeah.
So you know exactly at any point of time where your vehicle is. I remember talking to one of these companies in the bike rental business and I said, you know where your vehicles are. Why don't you get them back? They said the cost for us to acquire them back is huge. It's bigger than the cost of putting them out. Mm. So we just let them go. So knowingly, you're letting that happen. Now, you have to do this in a very controlled manner. and you can't do this. So it has to grow up and it has to build up in an economical, in a sensible fashion, not the way that that business was being built up. So if you can control that, if you can control your customers, if you can give them constant feedback that, you know, you left this vehicle and this is the kind of quality you left it at, they know that somebody's monitoring.
Okay.
So you have to have a product, one, which is robust enough, and second, which is easy to use and easy to read.
Okay. So now moving to the next part, you know, even within the entire group, you were almost like a startup. And we are in a country which is encouraging startups. And I'm sure you invest in a lot of startups as well. What are some of the mistakes startup entrepreneurs make?
So some of the things that startup entrepreneurs should look at is that don't just jump on the bandwagon because it's the flavor of the season. We've seen that multiple times in the past.
Correct.
Right now, online retail is big. So suddenly you've got a whole load of people jumping into online retail without actually knowing what the whole business plan is, or bizarre, without having a commercially viable business model. Mm-hmm. And they're suffering.
Yeah.
And lots of money has been burned in the process.
Yeah.
It's the same with electric vehicles. We've had number of companies jumping in. I said, what is your business model really and how are you going to build it? And they don't really have a clue on that. But they jump into it just because that's the flavor of the season. Mm-hmm. And somebody is willing to put money. Just because somebody is willing to put money doesn't necessarily mean that that makes it a commercially viable
Correct.
Business model.
Correct.
Because they've got different reasons for doing that. The investors have different reasons for doing that. There'll be very seldomly investors who say that, okay, I'm putting money to for you to actually grow your business. Mm. Their business model is that they have to flip the investment around to somebody else and then let somebody else take over. Mm. So startups, don't they have to get into a business model which is viable, commercially viable for them.
Absolutely.
It has to make sense for the investor. It has to make sense for the consumer. If it doesn't make sense for the consumer, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Who are you going to sell it to?
Yeah.
And it has to make sense for the company. Mm. So you can't constantly keep on selling a product at a loss all the time.
Yeah.
Eventually, there has to be a viable, profitable
Absolutely.
Business model, because that's what the investors are going to look at. Even when you go public, that's what the investors are going to look at. Mm. Where is your profitability? Mm. So they have to have that. Second is, once they have that, all of these pieces, the puzzle pieces down, then they have to be convinced about their own business model. Mm. And then no matter what, they have to run with it.
Mm.
But run with it in a sensible manner. Not that, you know, investors come in, they put money, suddenly you blow it up into marketing and, you know, into whatever it is that you do.
Mm.
You have to have your contingency plans in place,
mm.
knowing fully well that whatever I'm doing right now, maybe there will be roadblocks and hurdles along the way, because there will be issues that happen. No business is without problems. You look at across the sectors and there will be problems which happen. There will be unexpected issues that happen. So you have to have reserves to handle those.
Correct.
And you have to, if you have a run rate which is going well and you know that I'm going to run out of this,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to start raising the next round early enough.
Mm-hmm.
Not wait till you reach this final stage, because then it's going to be, then you have no negotiation power at that
Correct.
Point of time.
Correct. Interesting. Very interesting observations. So one of the questions which I often ask about startups, you know, there's a lot of buoyancy in startups, etc. And we also know 9 out of 10 startups don't make it. And I've been speaking a lot about the importance of explaining to startups how important it is to understand failure. And we've had instances of people having taken extreme steps.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
See, failure, whether you look at within the company-wide or product or any other aspects, is inevitable.
Correct.
Will happen.
Yeah.
You will have issues. And I've had numerous issues as well. I mean, along the way, products have failed and technologies that we have failed and the whole business model has failed and we've changed business model. In 3 days, we've actually completely altered our business models as well. So those kind of things will happen. Failures will only teach you, they give you that experience and
Correct.
The exposure to know what not to do in future.
Correct.
You have to keep moving.
Mm.
Now, whether you move forward or backwards, that is only time will tell.
Mm.
But you have to keep moving. Stagnancy is not going to help in any which way.
Mm.
Not taking a decision. So you have to constantly keep on taking decisions. And those decisions have to be based on certain parameters and factors. You have to do the best that you possibly can in terms of the knowledge that you can gain from outside, the external environment, internally what you can do, and then take a decision. And there are times that those decisions will go wrong.
Sure.
That's fine.
Sure.
As long as it's a known and a contained decision, and you've taken all kind of steps to be able to manage that should that go in the go south. So when I take when we are taking any decision, whether it's on the product or strategy or anything of that sort, we're looking at, okay, that's the best case scenario, but let's actually versus the worst case scenario and then see, does it still make sense? If it fails, is it going to pull me down completely?
Correct.
Or is that my notional loss that I'm going to have? Hmm. And if it's something which is manageable, then we go with that decision. Hmm. Also, you know, the kind of space that we are in, there is no precedence in the electric vehicle space. So we have nobody to say, okay, that business model worked for them, so maybe this will work for us. Hmm. What worked for somebody else worked in a very, very different environment, not in our environment. So we have to chop the strategy. And we have numerous companies who I come and who come and meet us, and they say that we follow your strategy, or we are looking at this thing because we've been able to alter our course very, very quickly over the last many years. And there are numerous examples of that where we failed completely, but yet we've been able to come out of that stronger.
Yeah.
So failures will happen, but you have to come out of that stronger. And if you believe in that, if you believe in the whole, if you are convinced of the product, then do not let it put you down.
Interesting.
So you've got to keep your spirits up. Yeah. And that's something that I've also learned from actually my past. Mm. So my school, I was in a boarding school, SNAR, and it said never give in. Mm. And so that's something which always plays in my mind. So whenever I see that there's some failure, there's something failing, I actually step back at a macro level. I go to 40,000 feet up and start looking at things from there. Mm. Okay, in the scheme of things, this failure, how much is that going to affect me? Is that going to kill the complete business, or is it going to really affect that? And when I look at the bigger thing, bigger picture, and then I see, okay, this is doable.
Yeah.
This is a risk worth taking. Mm. So we go for it.
Wonderful. So two more questions left. One is, and these are both about you. When, you know, you're busy with business, busy with family, business, you know, we all get consumed in our lives. When was the last time you did something for the first time?
Lots of times, actually.
Okay.
So I've always been into adventure sports, mm-hmm. right from my childhood. So I've always enjoyed that. But I think I'm doing more crazy adventure stuff now in the last 10 years than I have earlier. So not too long back, I went off-road biking. I hadn't been on a motorcycle since I was probably in the 11th or 12th. And that's the last time I got on a motorcycle. And suddenly I got this whole thing that I want to go off-road biking, and that too on a 1200cc BMW bike. Wow. This thing. So got an instructor, went off to Wales on an off-road track for 2 days, did nothing but just off-road biking, fell off the bike a number of times. Of course, you're wearing all protective gear and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was the most thrilling experience that I had. So I wanted to continue doing that. It's just that I got a bad back in between, and so I had to pull back from that. So I'm constantly trying to do new things. So I went a couple of years back, I went skydiving. Uh-huh. I've dived with sharks in the past, and not in a cage. I've actually dived in an aquarium with their tiger sharks around you.
Wow.
So I try to do all these.
Fantastic. That's quite inspirational. Quite inspirational.
And the day I stop doing these crazy things, I think I'm going to get old. So I don't want to stop doing
Absolutely.
These things.
So please don't stop at all. So my last question to you, and I ask this from all my guests, because you know so many people are listening to us talking. What were your learnings from some of your failures?
Some of the learnings that I've had actually are that consistently keep at it. Mm-hmm. Failure is possibly a short-term failure. It's not a long-term failure. Mm-hmm. Maybe something has happened which made you fail at this point of time, but maybe your strategy is right. Now, if I go back and look at my earlier days when I launched electric bicycles and I launched this thing, the kind of questions one I was asked, so it was a failure, actually, if I look at it. Electric bicycles didn't work at all.
Yeah.
Even now, electric bicycles in India is still a very small and a nascent category. It's still to come up to that level. So if I had pulled back from that, then I wouldn't be here having this interview with you. I would probably be doing some conventional business within the family or within the group, something, I don't know what. Mm. But because I was convinced that, okay, what I did is not right, but maybe if I tweak this around and do it this way, it could be different. So when I launched in 2001 versus in 2004, there was a lot of tweaking that I did. And then again, I came back to the market in 2007. So it took me 7 years. And then I launched electric scooters. So that's when the market began to take off. So I realized, okay, that's a mistake I was making, that people, even though we live in India, we think we understand Indians well, we understand the whole psyche well, but we make some of these blunders or some of these mistakes, which are very obvious, which seem very obvious later, about aspiration, for example. But a lot of companies do that. And I made those same mistakes as well. Yeah. But what I was able to learn from that and what I was able to see is that I know that there is a market out there.
Right.
So if there's a market out there and this path has not worked, okay, what is the alternate path that I'm going to take? And that's what I'm constantly doing, trying and finding alternate paths to get to that goal, because I know the goal is there.
Amazing. Wonderful. Naveen, thank you very much for coming to The Brand Called You. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. And I'm sure the thousands and thousands of people who listen to our podcast will love to hear you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure being here.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.